Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive, positively taking the show on the road this week. We have the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. I'll have Raven Scratch offs to give away. We're going to be at Coco's on Wednesday, one of my favorite places. Got some great guests coming over. Rasig is out of town, so I have a different co-host this week. Then on Friday, we're going to be back in Essex at Pizza John's, where I am sure to get a double provolone cheesesteak and probably want some meat sauce on my pizza proper down in Essex. So we're going to be at Pizza John's on Friday, where all smart people get their pizza, even the Dundalk people going over to Essex for all that. Here's a guy with some Essex roots, and he does enjoy himself at Pizza John's pizza. This week, though, it's all things Vikings as we get ready for football and a baseball week and a rare baseball press conference at Oriole Park at Camden Yards in early November to announce new manager Craig Albernaz. I was uninvited because, why would they want me there? Luke was there, and I don't know if you got to meet Mr. Rubenstein. I had the privilege of meeting Mr. Rubenstein a year ago, almost a year ago tomorrow night, actually. Tomorrow, Friday, that'll be a year ago that I met Mr. Rubenstein. How was it? How was the new thing down there? Certainly, an impressive guy, despite his crazy accent.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you asked me that initially before we started our conversation here on the air. But of the three, talking about Mike Elias, David Rubenstein, and Craig Albernaz, he was impressive. He comes across as very comfortable. He's got a wit to him. I think
Manzolino looked so uncomfortable from the beginning. Like there was never a point that dude looked comfortable ever.
I mean, he got more comfortable as the season went on, but right. I mean, no question. But he was self-deprecating enough, in terms of he's short. He's only 5'8". He has the thick accent, which even Rubenstein teased him about at one point during the press conference. But he just came across as very comfortable, and he came across as someone who's really excited about being a major league manager, really excited about being in Baltimore. His three kids and his wife were there and talked glowingly about his family. You can tell that his family means a lot to him. And I think the biggest takeaway for me, and this sounds funny because I was just talking about him and how he handled himself, but I thought that Stephen Vogt traveled to Baltimore to be there. The manager of the Cleveland Guardians and his close friend going back to them playing in the minors together. And for him to travel to Baltimore to be at the press conference for his close friend who was his bench coach and they grew together. Keep in mind, Stephen Vogt was a first-time manager a couple years ago with Cleveland. And he spoke so glowingly of Albernaz and his work ethic, his attention to detail, his love for the game, his love for players, his willingness to challenge. He talked about the number of times they have arguments to the point where it almost becomes a fight, but how they were total pros and then 5 minutes later they're fine and all that. But I think it said a lot about someone where his old boss and his close friend thinks so much of him that he wanted to be there on Tuesday. That resonated with me. And Albernaz, as much as he talks so glowingly about his wife and his three kids and his family, he came closest to getting choked up when he acknowledged Stephen Vogt being there. And I just that was cool. I just that was something that you don't necessarily hear a lot about. Like
I don't
I know
know the
that.
last time I had a press conference where, I mean, this is what when the Ravens have press conference, they bring the players in and guys come in the side door and whatever. Guys get contracts on the team, whatever. There is that camaraderie. I don't know the last time I've seen a buddy come with someone to show support. I
I
don't.
mean,
I'm not sure I know about that.
right. And like put it in context. Think of how many former assistants John Harbaugh has had. And look, not steering into anything about Harbaugh individually, just a general comparison, because I think it's the case in most places where I don't think John Harbaugh ever traveled to the city of his assistant becoming a head coach and attended the press conference. Like I haven't heard of that very often over the years. Players, yes, contract extension and teammates show up, yes. That was something that just seemed cool to me. And we even had a chance to talk to Stephen Vogt for 5 minutes after the press conference. And again, almost like a brotherly relationship that those two have. Like I said, I mean, he said that, look, just because I was the manager, I mean, he said Craig disagreed with me a lot and we had arguments and times at times it got heated, but we were better for it. Like our ball club was better for it. And he said how they kind of both grew into that role. And he kind of used it through the lens of, okay, Albernaz is going to take some lessons from Stephen Vogt as he becomes a new manager. But he says that he wouldn't have been nearly as successful and Cleveland wouldn't have been as successful with Albernaz there the last couple of years. So I just thought that was an interesting dynamic. Again, not something that you generally hear. Not saying it's completely unprecedented, but you know, I n there are no examples that really come to mind where someone's old boss thinks so much of someone that they get a gig and they're coming to that city to attend the press conference. That seemed pretty neat. And you know, I think it offers a glimpse into what we've been hearing from the time that Albernaz was hired. And look, you and I talked about it in the aftermath of the news breaking that I can't sit here and say that I was intimately familiar with this individual. I'd heard of him. I knew he had been in the mix for some other jobs going back to last year. And he said at that point, he just didn't feel like he was truly ready just yet. Whereas he felt like another year under his belt and being the, I think Cleveland gave him the associate manager title. He talked a lot about how Vogt and their front office very much included him in managerial duties, right? I mean, we think about the manager in the dugout spitting sunflower seeds and walking to the mound and making a pitching change. That's about 5% of the job. I mean, they even talked about it in those terms, but they really exposed him to everything Stephen Vogt was doing as the manager. He was there and he was taking part and he was observing that and offering feedback and being involved in those types of things.
Well,
So
any of those guys that are on the cusp, and I know this from the football side and the baseball side, but the baseball side was always different. It was
yeah.
much more old boy and buddy system and
Sure.
like all of that. Now it's much more streamlined and much more computer and much more you're on your computer all day and you're at the ballpark all day. Maybe you're on your computer as much as you're in the cages and on the video as much as you're into anything on the computer, right? But for me with football, anytime any of the guys got close, and I've known so many of them,
Yeah.
right? I mean, in my lifetime, starting with Jim Schwartz and Marvin Lewis trying to get a job back in the late 90s, and Billick getting the job, and Billick and I becoming close, and him hiring all sorts of assistants, and how and why, and you know, who's available, and who used to be a coach, and who was a head coach, and like all of that. There is a brotherhood in that world that is. And this speaks to John Harbaugh being groomed by Andy Reid, which was, John, you want to be a head coach, you got to go coach the secondary. I'm going to give you that chance. I'm going to make sure that I'm putting you in a position where one day you can be a head coach. And that's kind of what every assistant coach wants, needs, and expects, is that you're not going to get in their way of maximizing their career when they're on that track to being, in any of these sports businesses, the assistant to the assistant or a position coach, whatever it would be, that you're being groomed to be a head coach at every moment of every day, if that's what you think your job is going to be down the line. And it is incumbent upon whatever groups around you to teach you how to do that. There's no other place you can learn how to do that other than in that vocation than being on the job, right? So that is really good to hear from a press conference standpoint, is that he sort of has been very, very exposed to what being a manager is, which
Yeah,
is, yeah.
which you like hearing for someone who is a first-time major league manager, right? I mean, as we talked about, I mean, this isn't someone who has a lot of experience in terms of truly holding that title. I mean, he only managed, was only a manager in the minor leagues for 2 years in Tampa Bay. He's been a coach, but
And this is where
to
you
your
bring the veteran guy with you to sit on the end. You know, you bring another Don Zimmer or, you know, some Jim
sure.
Leland at the end of the bench or something like that, right?
Yeah, and that's where I think it's going to be key as we see the coaching staff start to develop. And it's become very apparent with some of the reporting that's been done that the Orioles aren't bringing back most of their coaches are gone. I mean, maybe they keep a couple, right? We'll see how that plays out. But I think that's going to be an important role. In the same way that I think for Stephen Vogt, who has been this manager of the year caliber skipper in Cleveland the last 2 years, where I think, he's going to need a different bench coach that doesn't necessarily need to be this veteran with managerial experience, but he's going to be missing Craig Albernaz based on the way that he talked about him. So, obviously that's going to be important. Obviously, it's going to be important to put together a staff. But I think, to bring it back to Albernaz, he seemed very comfortable handling himself there, in contrast to even at when Mike Elias has been perceived in the best possible light, kind of wooden, kind of stiff. In terms of talking to the media, even when things are going great, has never been someone that is going to wow you from a press conference standpoint. And look, at the end of the day, winning the press conference, what does that get you, right? I mean, ultimately, it's what you do and your actions and who you sign and all of that. But I think with Albernaz, to your point, you've talked a lot about this team trying to sell itself. Craig Albernaz, I'm not saying he's going to be all around town kissing babies and shaking hands and doing everything that anyone thinks a manager should do, per se. But in terms of just the press conference, just a 45-minute introductory press conference, he came across as comfortable. It didn't feel too big for him. He came across as eloquent. I mean, at one point in time, he was asked about, applying what he did in Cleveland, or philosophies that he had in Cleveland or in Tampa Bay or the Giants, when he was their bullpen coach. And he made a really good analogy that probably was rehearsed, but it didn't feel forced, in the sense that he brought up the Ravens and he said, look, John Harbaugh had a really interesting transition going from Joe Flacco to Lamar Jackson, where you're talking about two quarterbacks great in their very different ways, very different skill sets. They adapted their offense. And, he didn't do it in a way where it sounded like someone fed him that information and it sounded awkward or clunky. He said it in a way that I would believe that he watches football.
Yeah,
And
he's a football fan.
yeah, exactly. So, and that's just one example. I'm not saying that that automatically means he's going to be a great manager, but he felt very comfortable under the microscope. And that's a big part of the job. I mean, we've talked about this. I mean, for as much as the 2025 season was an utter disaster, we heard way more from Tony Mancelino every single day than we hear from Mike Elias or David Rubenstein or Eric Eddie or whoever, right? I mean, the manager, just like John Harbaugh, we hear from him way more than we hear from Eric DaCosta, right? You're the front-facing figurehead of the organization on a daily basis, especially in season. So what we saw on Tuesday makes me think that Albernaz can handle that part of the job. That doesn't mean he's going to be a great
Did
manager. We don't
anybody
know that.
ask Elias how well he knows Albernaz? Is there any relationship at all, or
It
did
didn't
they
really.
sort of just meet in a and 6 weeks ago and or 3 weeks ago in a hey, I'm going to hire you? It wasn't 6 weeks ago. He
I
was
mean,
that guy was playing baseball 3 weeks ago.
certainly Elias was asked about, how did you decide on him? How did you come to him in terms of like you? And he never offered like a specific connection. It wasn't like, oh, we both knew Joe Blow from our days in St. Louis, or something like. There wasn't anything like that. But you just got the sense, and Rubenstein said this as well, that as they talked to various people about the job, about the managerial opening, there were so many people that just said, okay, well, this candidate's good, but Albernaz is like, if you can get him, like if he's ready to leave Cleveland, that's the guy. It just seems there were so many people across the industry that felt that way, and we've heard that's in line with what we've heard. I mean, and again, we don't know if he's going to be a great manager. I don't know that. You don't know that. No one truly knows someone is going to be a great manager. I mean, heck, we've seen great managers
He'll be a
go
great
to a
manager if his players play.
and that's and right, and it still comes back to that at the end of the day, and we'll get to
Sam
that, right?
Perlazzo might have been the greatest manager of all
Sure.
time, but he didn't have players.
Earl Weaver didn't look like the same genius when he was, when he came back and the Orioles were a much diminished roster,
Yeah,
in
when Larry Sheets is your
1986.
cleanup hitter, no
Yeah,
offense, Larry,
compared to
but
1979 or
it's not Eddie Murray.
1970. Yeah, so we all understand that, but you just got the sense that no matter who they were talking to or other candidates that they had that they were interviewing, that it just kept coming back to him being the guy that felt like the star, right? Felt like the guy that made the most sense, checked the most boxes. Elias said exactly what I said to you, from the moment we talked about it, and we're literally looking at Albernaz's Wikipedia page, right? Because you didn't know a whole lot about him. Or I went to the Guardians media guide and read the page on him, right? But he talked a lot about the fact that he worked in Tampa Bay system. The Giants, not the same Giants of 15 years ago, but still an organization that carries some cachet, right? Certainly has some tradition, and his work there. And then Cleveland the last couple of years. I mean, especially when you talk about Tampa Bay and Cleveland, there are few examples better than those two organizations in terms of getting the most out of what they're spending and what they're doing
Or
in
what you
terms of
think the
their
Orioles are going to
resources.
be. But they're more, we
Yeah,
have
I
these
mean,
sister cities in other countries. You try to make them the same size. You know,
yeah.
our sister city in Japan is not Tokyo. You know what I mean?
Right.
And th
I
so
mean,
this isn't running the Yankees or the Dodgers. This
oh.
is running, as he sits next to Mr. Rubenstein, I don't know what they think their ceiling is on. And listen, you and I will go down a long, ugly path about their offseason and selling tickets and Katie
Sure.
Griggs and what the manager represents and doesn't represent and what should and should be happening with a franchise that is dormant every offseason and has been for 30 years, literally, and had a creep for an owner that they've never really gotten out from under. They've never really gotten away from Angelos yet, although they're trying. But part of that is they lost a 500,000 fans this year. They finished in last place this year. So, I'm not going to come in this with kid gloves from another press conference that I was banned from being at and saying things have changed around there. Nothing's changed around there to me other than names and hats. And I'm not sure that David Rubenstein is any more competent as an owner than Peter Angelos was, or any more willing to spend what perceived wealth he has on overpaying baseball players to come to Baltimore to maybe sell some tickets, to maybe make the optics better, to maybe discount the tickets because that's what it's going to take. And Katie doesn't understand that. I saw her last week. Like, they think they're a premium this and a premium that, and they're beating out home plate, and they didn't even hire Janet Marie to do it. And what does she care? She held the trophy the other night in Toronto. So they're doing a lot of things around here that I look at and say, I wouldn't do it that way, but I've only lived here my whole life and observed it my whole life. But I'm just the a-hole with the long hair who's the Hispanic guy that gets locked out and they let you in and not me in. But like, they have so much work to do on the business side of promoting Craig Albernaz as what they're doing, trying to be in people's DNA over the next 4 or 5 months so that they're not completely dormant. And the Ravens are going to be whatever they are. I mean, the next couple of weeks, they have to win football games just to be relevant. Otherwise, we're shoveling dirt on them in 3 weeks, and we won't have that going on. And I don't mean that the Orioles need to be out on every free agent and making headlines and signing five guys in the offseason, but they need to maximize whatever the offseason is for them that I don't even know what I'm talking about, Lou, because I haven't seen it here in 30 years. I haven't seen anything that looks like a heartbeat. So when I see this press conference that I was banned from, that you were there, and I go and see that there aren't a lot of comments, that people weren't really watching it in real time, that nobody knows who he is, so there can be no like opinion on him other than Stephen Vogt's opinion from the fan base perspective. I just would like to see them become a better company, become a better business in the offseason because, and I know what you're going to get me, and I know everybody's listening. Ain't nobody coming until they win. They're going to win. Well, they can't win anything before June of next year, like for us to figure out whether they're any good or not. So between now and next June, what can they do? What can they do? Well, win some press conferences, right? Be hands-on, be involved, be recruiting people who may be disenchanted or disgruntled Ravens fans who don't go to the games anymore. I'm one of those guys. I have money. I like baseball. Engage me. That's all. And I think the press conference, to your point, David Rubenstein's level of engagement is having that goof that whistles the national anthem. Be a front man for all the Alaskan oil nonsense that he's doing and all the awful things David Rubenstein's doing to the planet that the liberals will get after him on. But Mike Elias is a zero in recruitment. He is, I would have fired him for firing the manager and hiding for 3.5 days. And if I had a press pass on Tuesday, and I know this would have cost you your press pass, but if I would have been there to ask a question, I would have said, hey, Mike, you fired your manager 5 months ago. You now have your new manager. Do you have any regrets about how that went down back in June? Do you have any thoughts at all as you sit next to the new manager, that you would fire him 3 years from now and hide for 4.5 days in Milwaukee, and then show back up at the press conference 5 months later after a last place season where 500,000 people went away, and say, "Here's your new guy. We're going to win it all next year."
I mean, I'll go back to something you said. I mean, nothing changes until it changes, right? I mean, they have a heck of a lot to prove across the board. I mean, I'm going to continue to remain focused on what they need to do on the field because I still think that's not to say everything else you mentioned is not important because it is. But if you have all that stuff, and even if you do all that stuff to a better degree, people still aren't going to come if the product stinks, right? The product stunk this past year.
And the product has stunk most of your lifetime. So that's
Sure.
not
And that, and
that's
look, that part.
really, really. So people ask me. I was at the Associated Italian Charities the other night, right? And I pissed a lot of the guys. It's all dudes, all Italian dudes, all my age or older for the most part. Republicans. Just I had a lot of that going on. But I'm like, when's the last ball games you guys went to? All white guys, all Baltimore accents. Every one of you, if Mike Bordick walked in the room, you'd recognize him. So don't tell me you're not a sports fan or a baseball fan. And that's just a middling guy. It doesn't have to be Brooks Robinson or Cal Ripken walking in. That we're baseball people and we're Baltimore people. When's the last ball game you went to? 80 guys in the room, two of them said I went to more than five games last year. And I'm thinking, well, if they aren't getting us, if they aren't getting the people who built the team, who have all of these memories in the 90s and the Angelos memories, and we're and remember 83 because we're old enough to remember that. And when they all heard my name was Aparicio, oh my God, especially the guys over 75 in the room. Oh, Aparicio, man, that means something to them. I don't know what would mean anything to fans in this offseason. And to your point, there's only so much they can do. If they buy a $200 million player, they trade for Ohtani, does that mean that tickets get sold here, or that everybody runs back like orange lemmings? I know you're a little younger, but you're an old soul. I've been doing this 35 years here, and I can't begin to tell you how many Novembers and Decembers and Januaries and Februaries where I sat here, took phone calls. I brought Mike Flanagan on when he's running it, Jim Beattie, whatever, to talk about their off seasons in regard to them not going away. Not being like a bear and going in the back of the cave and coming out in hibernation and saying, "Oh, it's opening day." When things were going well here, and well is relative because they had something here that was an inferno when you were a boy, where Monday they're signing Robbie Alomar, Thursday they're signing Jimmy Key, the next Monday they're signing BJ Surhoff. Let's deal for David Wells and Scott Erickson. I mean, they were a real thing, and that was part of the soap opera of following it, being passionate about it, buying Christmas ornaments on your tree, buying Junior Oriole packages to give the little Luke and Justin for a Christmas time to go to the ballpark next year because we're excited about going to the ballpark. They need to do some work. More work than I saw Katie Griggs doing for my $100 last Tuesday at the Baltimore Business Journal event. And this is all new now. Mr. Rubenstein's given out his bobbleheads. He's done his Papa Wave. He has his brand. They have a manager. They're a last place team that is perceived to have a lot of money that these rich guys want to spend. And then I look at the real bottom line when Katie Griggs looks at the numbers and says, "Where's the media money? Where's the promotional money? Where's the advertising money? Where's the national money? Where are our ticket sales? Where are our suite sales? Where's our game day revenue when nobody's here? Like, where's this money coming from, Katie?" As Michael Arrighetti comes down the hallway, Mr. Big, Mr. Make It Rain. And I don't know who they're buying in the offseason. I just know they need to win some press conferences. And I don't mean that in any prick way. I mean, like, they need to be relevant in the offseason because this nonsense of they need to win, that's the only thing that's going to matter, that will matter once it comes. It's everything they do between now and when they win that matters. And recruiting 100 men that I had in a room the other night who don't go to baseball games, who all went to baseball games, and a lot of them had the, "Well, I don't go to the city. The city's not safe." And like, so I had that. I had the Fox 45 news group going too, but nobody has any problem going down there on 21-31 night. Nobody has any problem going down there when Morgan Wallen's in town, or when the right concert's at the arena, or when the right ball game's at the arena, or if Caitlin Clark's in town. Like, so I don't. I call bupkis on all of that part of the Orioles experience, that they should be a part of talking about how safe it is and what they're doing and what they're doing for fans. But this speaks to leadership. And Rubenstein, zero for me, a zero 2 years into this. And he was at the press conference. Elias, drafting baseball players, I'll give him a thumbs up on that. The rest of the job, including being front-facing, firing his manager and hiding for 4 days, being the mouse on the dais on Tuesday. I hope that Albernaz is this transformational leader and a front guy for them, and everything that you and I are glowing about today, because somebody asked me, a guy who didn't like me, asked me at this event the other night, "You like seeing them lose, don't you? For what they did to you." I'm like, you think after 35 years of this shit that I want to sit here and watch them finish in last place again next year? Like, seriously? You think that I get my rocks off on them losing? No. Nothing good happens when these teams lose. Now, that being said, nothing good happens when Justin Tucker's rubbing down women, or when they're doing stupid things, or even when the general manager's firing the manager on a Saturday when things are falling apart on Preakness Saturday and then hiding for 4 days. And then they put him back on the day 6 months later and say, this is leadership. It's not leadership to me. Mike Elias, no bueno. Now, Craig Albernaz could be thumbs up. Katie Griggs, no bueno. David Rubenstein, double no bueno. Just it's been a real disappointment from that opening day a year and a half ago when the bridge went down and there was this new hope. Since then, my God, their last 18 months have been a disaster in almost every measurable way, down to Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman, and other than Trevor Rogers and Bradish's arm falling off twice and him coming back. For me, I just want to see the next 5 months where you and I are forced to talk about them in some way. Literally, make me talk about you, make me interested in you, get me interested in you. That's my off-season message to the billionaires, the general manager who hides, the team president that's banning me because I did a walkout on Peter effing Angelos 20 years ago, that a shitburger he richly deserved 20 years ago. But I would say this for all of them, they're in charge now. It's a new group. Miss Seattle's in town. She's getting the All-Star game. They got lots of money, 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 money. They got the greatest stadium. We gave them $600 million to put you in left field in the press box. And now they have the best manager in the marketplace. And I would agree with that. They got the top of school guy. Now, how are they going to have a top of school offseason on and off the field? On and off the field. Because it's the stuff that matters that builds the fact that I'm interested in them come opening day, not that they go away from me like they might to your brother and your sister and your mother, and they come back again on March 25th or whenever opening day is against the Twins. Doesn't seem that far off somehow. You're in November already. But they need to make you and I talk about them. And that's my monologue that I've gone on forever about it. But they need to make those men in that room the other night care, and their grandsons and granddaughters, so that people do care about them. Because they can't win until June or July. I'm with you on that. And they need to be more relevant than that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying. They've got to sustain. I mean, they need to balance the here and now and doing everything they can to make it better right now. To your point, having an off season where they're more engaged and it's not just completely in the shadows. And look, a lot of it's going to be in the shadows because other than the NFL with. They make a tentpole event out of everything, right? Where, I mean, the schedule release is an event. All these sports have some of that goes on where you go away for a little while, right? I mean, you're not going to sign 30 free agents to have a press conference every 3 days in the off season, but you certainly need to do better in that regard. You certainly need to be engaging. You certainly need to touch your fans as much as you can
Yeah,
in
why weren't
concert.
they at the Italian event? That's what I asked these guys. I'm like, yeah, you're underwhelmed by the kid from Dundalk with the long hair here. Where are the Orioles and the Ravens out here doing community things? Where are they? I don't see them. It's either me or Mike Preston. Those are your choices. So I still think, like, they make a whole lot more money than I do or you do. They should be out seeing their fans, seeking their fans, recruiting this community. They need to recruit this community with the guy from the Habba and the Boston Act. Like, that's not recruiting the community. He might be the world's greatest guy, but that video last week was just sort of like, save that. That was not a come on for me to watch the press conference or to buy tickets or to get the Christmas ornaments or to go down to their power hour or to hit their caravan, because they've got the sycophants they have. They have people that will take the Birdland thing. If it's 20% more, they'll pay it. They have those people. They have to keep those people happy, but I don't know, 30 years of losing's recruited them. It hasn't recruited me, and it hasn't recruited a lot of people. And you love baseball and I love baseball. I just want to be recruited. That's all. And I don't care if they've been nice to me or not. That's not even the point.
Yeah.
I care that they're nice to everybody else. When
I
you're in
get.
that warehouse yesterday, does your DNA and feeling feel like Peter Angelos is dead and gone and John's not coming back, and that it feels new and fresh and exciting, and that these are the greatest people, and that Katie Greggs is at the front door and all of her minions are there to smile at you instead of do what they've done for 30 years, which is look at you like you cut a fart?
What, me?
You, anybody, do you walk in there and feel like there's new oxygen? Because there has to be. Because the old oxygen was horrific. It was horrific. Everything about it was horrific.
I already said to you that I agree. Nothing changes until it changes. But I still think, look, you keep talking about recruiting people. I'll keep giving you the same boring answer that you don't want to hear. Well, I don't care so much about you being at this or that. Like, who are you signing? Who's
Okay.
going to be in the road? No, I'm just,
You're right.
that's the truth. I
That
mean,
is
and
part of winning the offseason is the
that's
press
ab
conference. The
it's
press
not.
conference is all you have in the offseason. You better damn well win
No, I mean,
it.
what you have in the offseason is making your baseball team better. I mean, that's what it is. I don't think the press conference is as important as what you were saying it is. Winning is paramount, and sustained winning is paramount.
But they can't do that until then, is my point.
I understand that, but that's why I'm saying there's only so much they're going to be able to do that's going to truly recruit people. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. I'd love to see them bring back FanFest. I loved FanFest as a kid. Are they going to? I'm not holding my breath. Should they? Yeah. But that said, I don't. Part of the issue here is you've lost two generations of fans who aren't going to be engaged in the off
And you know
season.
what? If I were here with Katie Griggs, she would interrupt me. Our fans are fine. They're here. I have their phone numbers. They have never acknowledged how awful this is. Not even in any unovert way to not piss on Angela. I'll take care of that. I'll take care of Angelos's legacy. I'll be the guy for that. They don't have to be like that, but they have to acknowledge what you just acknowledged, which is, it's the thing people won't acknowledge about how crazy Trump is and how demented all of this is. It's like, if you can't look at the obvious, you always say call a spade. Some people are offended by that term, but like, if you can't look at it and see it for what it is, if they're going to push back on how they've lost two generations, they would argue, they would stop you dead in your tracks the way I did. Well, we're not going to admit that. We're not going to admit the obvious truth, that the stadium's empty. And there's no acknowledgement of that. And I'm telling, can I, you finish up because I have something I got to tell you. It's going to make you laugh, but go ahead.
I mean, I was just gonna say, and you've got to sustain it. I mean, look, I've been covering the team since 2010. When they went from 2011 to 2012, where in 11 they were in last place, 2012 they make the playoffs for the first time in what, 15 years? Their attendance went from 1.7 to 2.1 the following year, 2.3 next year, 2.4.
And you know what? Buck Showalter was really good at recruiting the community.
He was, but it was fleeting, right? A couple years ago, I mean, they drew just under 2.3 in 2024. They went from 1.36 to 1.93 from 2022 to 23. Now, that was also coming out of COVID era and all that, but there was growth. But if you don't sustain that, it's just going to dip right back down, right? I mean, we talked about this a decade ago when the Kansas City Royals won the World Series, right? You know people very well in Kansas City, media friends and all of that. And
I never thought it was forever. When I'm in there, it was a sea of blue, and we were
But
there for the fireworks that night.
that's
I
kind of
would have
where,
said,
but that's how it is most places, right? I mean, we're a front runner society. I mean, we just are, right? For every team and fan base and franchise in major team professional sports in North America, that's like the Cubs. You have 10 other teams that if you stink, no one's coming to the games. And if you're mediocre, Not many people are coming to the games, right? If you're great, people will show up. If you're great for a long period of time, then people will show up for a long period of time. But you've got to sustain that. To me, that there needs to be a requisite level. I mean, look at the Ravens. I mean, you talk about teams that have sustained a really high level for the better part of a quarter century now. And yet, look how empty the stadium was against the Texans and against the Rams. Now, that's not a commentary on Baltimore or Baltimore fans. I think that's a commentary just where we are as a society with major professional sports and also understanding, yeah, it is expensive. And yeah, watching it on TV is a really good experience, way better than it was 20 years ago, because my TV's 55 inches or 70 inches or whatever. And the beer's cheap and food's cheap and all that. And I have to subscribe to five different satellite or streaming
You have
services to
no
watch all the
idea
games.
how pissed I was at Amazon Prime last
Right,
Thursday when I'm trying to stream that game. Right. I
but
hear you.
all of
That
that is.
level of frustration as a lifelong fan is make it easier than this for me,
I mean,
right?
I pull back the curtain a little bit on me personally right now. I'm a YouTube TV subscriber right now for my quote cable. They're in a dispute with ESPN. Now, I'm fortunate enough that I have an antenna and I have an open sky to the south that I can get all my over-the-air channels free. So I was able to watch Monday Night Football on WMAR Channel 2. But everything I'm paying for YouTube TV, Amazon, Peacock, go down the list of all the different, and I don't have all of them, but I have enough of them, right? And yet there was college football games on Saturday that I couldn't watch, right? So that's part of the consumer frustration or just the reality of, yeah, if the Orioles are going to raise prices and they're not that good and they've been bad for most of my lifetime to the point where I'm not a dyed in the wool, die hard, live and breathe with the Orioles. And I don't mean myself, I'm just talking as your average 42-year-old from this area. Then, no, I'm not going to get a 20-game plan, especially when you eliminated the 13-game plan. You know what I mean? Like, so I just, there's a lot there. And I don't mean that to make it sound totally defeatist. I just mean, it's not just about this offseason. It's not just about 2026. They've got to sustain this thing. You and I have talked about that a lot in terms of what their long-term health of that brand is ever going to be. And I don't, again, that doesn't, not sitting here saying that it means they won't exist 20 years from now, but the idea of some vision of this thing being great again, I mean, I'd love to see that. But man, it's been so long that it's been great. I mean, you have to go back to when I was a baby. That was the end of it, from the mid-60s through the mid-80s of this team being as practically the Yankees of that era, or one of those teams in that select group. So, I mean,
And they're
it's
still
not
eating
just
off of that when they're giving out Boog Pal bobbleheads.
sure.
Right.
And
Yeah.
look, that and there's nothing wrong with that being part of it, but that can't be the only thing. I mean, it was so eye-opening to me. And I talked about this at the time when they had the Hall of Fame night for Adam Jones going into the Orioles Hall of Fame. I've said it. I know Alan and I have talked about you've talked about it with Alan. I'll continue to say Adam Jones is the most important player they've had since Cal Ripken. He's still beloved in this town. They didn't sell out for that game. And I don't think that has anything to do with Adam Jones. I think that has to do with the disdain and frustration and
They also had
disinterest.
100,000 people that went to the bananas 3 days later, literally, right?
I
And had
still think
money
that's.
into that and say, hey, I'm spending $200 at bananas on Friday. I'm not going to the Oriole game the Friday before. I mean, literally, there's a little bit of that too.
I mean, there's always that. I mean, the difference between a special event or a specific concert and a team that plays 81
The
games is not.
bananas cost them tickets last summer for sure. Like, people made that the night that they did in August instead of last place baseball,
Okay.
literally.
Okay. I mean, I guess. I suppose. I still think that's an apples to oranges comparison. I mean, if the bananas played 81 times in Baltimore, they're not selling out 81 games.
100%. I
So,
agree with that.
but your point is noted. The point is, there are lots of different ways to spend disposable income. And when you have a franchise that has been as bad as they have been for the better part of 4 decades now, you have to compete. You are not going to just get people's disposable income because that's how they do it, right? That's what they've always done. That mindset That existed back in the 90s and even into the early
Oh, dude, you have
2000s.
no idea. When they threw me out and started treating me like shit back at the turn of the century, their whole thing was, you'll be lined up for playoff tickets once we make
Yeah.
the
Well, they
playoffs.
didn't make the playoffs.
You're gonna lose your season tickets. You're gonna lose your seat. There was such arrogance that still exists. I'll leave you with this. This is my parting shot, is that I spent $100 last Tuesday, gave my day up, went down to hear Sashi Brown and Katie Griggs. I videoed most of it, so I have transcript, like literally the words that they spoke. So I haven't watched it. I've been busy. I was in Nashville. We played football. I got things going on, right? So I haven't watched it, but I'm going to transcribe it to see the quotes again. It was very pablum. It was very talking points. It's everything you've heard Katie say before, if you've ever heard Katie say anything. It was everything you've heard Sashi say. But here was the interesting part. Abe McCarr, who was the MC, moderator, he had seven questions he had written down, and they were open, and they were just. Anybody, I could have gone up and asked his questions. There was nothing specific about it or anything even local. But he's like, what is the number one complaint or fan thing that makes its way to your desk? And Sashi, I'll take that one. Traffic. Post-game traffic. It's post-game traffic. People just, we work with the city, we work with ingress, egress, and it's really important that when people leave the stadium that they can get home at a quick time because that's their last experience. And if they have a hard time getting out of our parking lot, they might not come back to our game. Paraphrasing him, that's pretty much what he said. And then they go to Katie and I'm like, yeah, post-game traffic's not a problem for you. You should hope that at some point. I moved downtown. I lived here in 2003. When I moved downtown, there was literally a concern for my wife and I to say, man, it's 81 nights a year. We're going to have a little push and pull with 40,000 people being downtown. I assure you, after living down there for 19 years, I didn't get stuck in Oriole traffic three times in 20 years because there was no thing. And I thought that that was an interesting. First off, I don't know why Sashi picked that or why maybe that's his in his heart of hearts. That really is what people complain about. They complain about getting stuck at a game that was too good at the end of the night. I don't know, but that's what he said. And I thought to myself, she's new to the gig, new to the job, and she couldn't even respond to that. It was kind of like a low kick to me, sort of like post-game traffic's not an issue for the Orioles. But I do wonder for her what she's doing the next 5 months. And I spent $100 last week to hear her speak to try to get some vibe on that, to try to get some front face. I run into their salespeople at a Connects event next week that Ivan Bates is going to be speaking at. I get around town. I talk to people. I'm out. I live in the, I'm a person of the community. I get out and I talk to a lot of people about a lot of things. And it will be interesting how many people come up to me in the next 4 months and want to, in any way, engage me about the baseball team in any way. And that has to be their goal. Even though they don't want me talking about them on the radio because I'm a bad guy, I hate them. Even though I talk about them all day and want nothing but good things for them, they need us talking about them, man. Like, don't underestimate yourself because, and your ability to talk about them at a level that only people like Craig Heist, who's no longer with us, or Peter Schmuck, who doesn't do it anymore, or, people that really know baseball and really know this town, it's a shame that they didn't take a better tack with me and people like me. And people in this community to want to go out and say, who are the 100 people that hated Peter the most who still love baseball? Let's find them and let's wash that away. They haven't washed anything away. It's very corporate. It's very, to me, and Albernaz isn't that, but he's been here a minute. And I'm wondering the next time I hear his voice on a television screen, on my video, on the news. In town at a charity event in December with Mr. Rubenstein, grifting along at the Brown Advisory, trying to get big sponsors. I'm wondering when I'm going to hear his Boston accent again. It's November 5th, right? Like, it can't be February 14th. It just can't
Fair
be. Not
enough.
for this franchise.
Fair
If
enough.
he's going to be the leader, step up, be the guy, because Rubenstein can't do it and doesn't want to, and Katie Griggs is, doesn't matter, and Mike Elias, it's not his jam. So I want to see them recruit the community. But dude, that I said that to John Angelos and Peter, and I said that to every TJ Brightman and Greg Bader, and none of them got it. And I don't have any hope based on what I've seen of Katie Griggs last week that I paid to see, and David Rubenstein and the press conference, and the mindset that you have that they have too, which is, well, we need to win. All right. Well, between now and then, what are you doing? That's my challenge
You
to
got to
them.
make your baseball team better. I mean that.
And that
Look,
makes us talk about them.
well, I'm exactly. Look, I if it's just another get better around the margins off season, then yeah, it's gonna be. Look, I can compliment them. They got Andrew Kittredge back for cash on Tuesday. They dealt him. They got a prospect for renting him to
That's
the Cubs.
63 innings in their bullpen that they fixed, right?
That's a good move.
Yeah.
I can't sell the offseason on that though. Like that's not
Yeah.
making them a contender. Like that's a piece in their bullpen. Good for them. Like I well done.
Well,
Nice
every
move.
week for the next
But
8 weeks, if they add a little piece and we get to talk about it, that's good.
that needs to be like I don't know, like 12th or 13th on the list of good things they do this offseason, right?
Okay,
I mean,
I'll break it at this because I got to run and our window is what it is. Luke Jones is here. He's Baltimore Luke. He'll be doing football all week. We're doing Minnesota. We're doing the Orioles. He did the press conference. All of it's up. I'll have more thoughts. Katie Griggs still isn't coming on. I'm still not getting a press pass, and I'm good with all that. I would just say this for them to break it off. You and I get together personally, privately, as friends, as coworkers, and we say, do we need to do an Oriole piece today? Let me know the next time we need to do an Oriole piece. And let me know how many of those we need to do between now and, let's say, Super Bowl Sunday, which is the beginning of spring training. So the over-under better be 10, not 3. That's all I'm going to say. He's
totally.
Luke. I'm Nestor. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore positive. It's still football season here, but don't tell the Orioles.